www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
And people even then would say, oh, the Zodiac, he's my neighbor down the street. Or who's that creepy teacher we have? He must be the Zodiac. It was, you know, it was all over the place. It was interesting. It really stuck around in the air heavy.
Raising. With things a little summerishly slow on the Most Wanted front, we're taking a look at three takes on a notorious cold case, the Zodiac Killer, and the other Zodiac Killer. This is The Blotter Presents, episode 19. Welcome back, everybody. This is The Blotter Presents. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm one of, I'm going to say, nine people who doesn't think her dad is the Zodiac. I'm joined once again by my esteemed colleague and San Francisco crime story expert, Eve Beatty. Hello, Eve.
Hi there. My dad is also not the Zodiac.
I was just about to ask. Thank you for that confirmation and congratulations.
I know. You. It's pretty much you and me.
I know. We'll get into that later. There's just not a whole lot new or debuting this week, so I thought we would get into one of the cases that has fascinated me for years. Zodiac Killer, our all cold case. Episode starts with True Crime with Aphrodite Jones, an episode I had to watch in my office with the door closed because even the hint of the sound of her voice will send my husband into a rage spiral. Totally get it. She is tough to take, but even aside from her nonstop self-promotion, and would anyone else object to putting her and Janine Pirro in a sack and throwing them in the Passaic?
Well, the whole setup with the show where there's sort of the third party person like Aphrodite Jones is driven to do this. I'm like, we know who you are. We know that. I mean, can you imagine, like, you know, if I was like writing a crime story and I'm like, and reporter Eve Beatty was really driven to find out who did this thing. I mean, it would just be insane. But somehow, like, somebody somewhere thinks it works for a TV show. I mean, the whole structure of that. I think that I watched that when I was one of her episodes when I was preparing for another episode that I did with you, Sarah. I think that she did an episode on the San Francisco dog mauling case. And I was watching it and I was like, I cannot make Sarah watch this because it's just so annoying.
She's really the worst. I mean, she's not actually the worst, but now I kind of want to do a parody, True Crime with Eve Beatty, where like I'm just following you like 2 feet away, narrating what you're doing, and occasionally you're like, I don't know her, I'm not with her.
It really makes you like appreciate Nancy Grace, that at least she owns her ego, you know?
Yeah, and she does her own, like, she does her own like self-aggrandizing voiceovers. But all of that aside, this episode, I found it a little tiring just from a like presentation of the crimes standpoint, mm-hmm. because it did go over the crimes in detail, which can be a little boring for someone who is better versed in the case than someone who is just dialing past this in their hotel room. What did you think about that?
Well, I mean, I do think that there's a way to sort of present the crimes in, I felt like it was sort of unevenly presented. There would have been a better way to sort of be like, well, so here's what happened, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, I don't know, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback, but I, you know, having read an enormous amount of this coverage over the years, and just because I worked at the San Francisco Chronicle for a while, I do know that there are all these better ways to do it with timelines or something. You could whip through that if you wanted to get to all the theories. And instead, it seems like there was a lot of time spent on these sort of individual crimes that didn't get us anywhere, which meant we only really got to see one theory on the suspect.
Indeed. And that was the conspiracy theory of one Dennis Kaufman, who claims his stepdad confessed to the killings on tape. Here's Aphrodite Jones dying about how unlikely this is in clip two, in what for her is a fairly impressive feat of talking head diplomacy.
When I got to the house where Dennis Kaufman lives, I felt like, oh my God, maybe this is somebody who is grasping at a straw. I've known so many people who want to attach themselves to a name like Zodiac, and maybe he's another one of them.
I too was pleasantly surprised that she even acknowledged that. But then, if you feel that way, then why give him so much airtime? There are so many other, which we'll get into in a moment, there are so many other more viable, huge air quotes as big as you can imagine, theories than just Dennis Kaufman's stepdaddy issues. So why was that? Was he the only guy that she could get? Was he just like, was he like nearby? Was he just a couple blocks away or something? Like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I come back to this a lot on The Blotter Presents, like my frustration with these theories that people like have these recovered memories that dad, you know, took a detour on the carpool to go kill the Black Dahlia or whatever the hell. I am frustrated with them, but I feel like maybe there's something going on here that's like my dad or my stepdad was like a bad guy. He was an abusive guy. I've had a lot of issues surrounding that. And if I can attach him to a famous case, maybe I can get some kind of like, well, closure doesn't exist. But I feel like having seen this, I don't buy Kaufman's theory at all. Like,
well,
we see a videotape
of
him opening the speaker and finding this hood that Zodiac wore for the Lake Berryessa killings, allegedly. But it's like there's no interrogation by the show of whether that could have been.
The FBI still hasn't submitted a report on it. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Because when you send the FBI garbage, they don't devote resources to it.
Let me just skip ahead to clip four and we can hear the show's quote-unquote take on that.
Dennis discovers what seems to be the notorious Zodiac mask. Could it be the same one worn by the killer when he attacked Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd at Lake Berryessa?
Could it be that someone in Dennis's circle had a gift card to Joanne Fabrics and made the shit for $4? I mean, like, there's just no... Like, you're shown this videotape that Dennis made and there's a caption on it that's like Kaufman videotape, like, And he's making a big show of like opening the speaker on video. Like, who knows what we'll find? Like, he's Geraldo with Al Capone's vault. Like, but what you didn't show us was, like, we have no chain of custody on that. Like, what are you doing, buddy?
Well, I think that, you know, you're hitting on something there with, you know, the mass discovery and stuff that sort of leads to one of the reasons that I think that this story sticks with people, and also why there are this enormous number of theories, is that almost every piece of evidence we have, once again, air quotes, you know, it's a single sourced piece of evidence. And it's just like, well, this is what I saw. The mask is one example of that, right? You know, as we saw on this Aphrodite Jones episode, the mask is something that we saw from this one specific slaying, you know, by this lake with this couple where, you know, and it was a stabbing and the woman is dead and the guy manages to survive. And there are many very reasonable people in San Francisco and San Francisco law enforcement, just people having drinks, who look at that story and say, you know who usually is the person responsible for killing a girlfriend when the guy's still alive? I am certainly not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination that, you know, anyone's pretending to be a Zodiac to kill anyone else. But that is the most reasonable explanation in a situation like that.
And you're absolutely right. And once you say it, it sounds very obvious. And yet, having sat with various takes on the Zodiac case for decades, I never had thought about that he might have done that. But some of the, that makes so much more sense than some of the quote unquote, huge air quotes again, conclusions that tend to be drawn about this case. Like, if you're following us on social media this week, which you should do, we are on Facebook at The Blotter Presents, or at Blotter Presents, excuse me. And we're also on Twitter at Blotter Presents. I made a composite of this police composite drawing that Kaufman's like, oh, he had these the same eyeglasses, and here's
Jesus
a picture.
Christ.
And then I did the other half of my composite is the banner from my website, The Blotter. That's the-blotter.com. I took the picture that is in the banner. It's a Brooklyn police log from like the Brooklyn Eagle. And then my dad's old target range glasses from the Army in the 60s, because they looked old-timey and reportery, like literally every man with corrective lenses had either those or the Kennedy cabinet ones with the black plastic tops. Like, there were two pairs of glasses for guys. He had one of them. Nothing.
My father, who is not the Zodiac killer, had those same glasses. I think that, like, that sort of glasses frame, and this is pulling back from some long ago memory, that sort of glasses frame was like common issue if you were getting like health insurance while you were in college through the ROTC or something too. So think about it. Every single guy who wasn't in Vietnam, who was like an ROTC on campus, which is a lot of guys, probably ended up with glasses like that if they had correctives. And let's go back to that police composite. Once again, we're talking about this sort of one source of evidence. The police composite comes from the slang of the cab driver on a block that, where I writing this crime story, would describe as a Tony San Francisco intersection. You know, they say I think it was Washington and Maple, right? That's a really nice part of town. When I first moved here, I was a babysitter and I was inside a lot of these houses. This is where people with money have always lived. So we have some teenagers who were out in the evening on a front balcony partying, who saw this guy leaving the cab. And that's where we get our police composite.
Yeah. A couple stories up in the dark.
Rich kids
drunk.
At a party.
Yeah. Exactly.
What is practically Pacific Heights.
Yeah, keeping in mind also that the initial broadcast, said that he was African American. So even the cops couldn't figure out what race he was when he's on foot fleeing.
I mean, which is ludicrous, because I can tell you right now, no cab driver in the late 60s and early 70s was picking up a black guy in the Tenderloin, which is where the cabbie picked the guy up in the first place. But whatever.
And drove him to Pacific Heights.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah.
That doesn't track. It's just one of those clues that you hear like over and over again. That it's like, well, you know, a lot of these crimes took place by water. Like, I don't know. This is like item number one in the like fake palm reading, cold read checklist. Mm-hmm. I see a, you know, handsome man, dark complected. I see the letter J. You're by some water. Like
John Edward, is it you?
Yeah, you're never wrong. It really works out nicely. And I don't know. If the show had spent a little more time actually trying to come up with a new take on old evidence that wasn't asinine, instead of like, quote, profiling like we're about to hear in clip 3...
By studying his writings and his actions, experts gain insight into the killer's possible motivations. Aphrodite Jones believes that one clue seems clear. The Zodiac appears to have a violent, angry tendency towards women.
This handwriting analysis, malarkey. Okay, now when we get to sort of the next segment and we look at the news footage, spoiler alert, we're going to do that in a bit. We're going to see a guy, a handwriting analysis guy, who is trying to verify, if all of the Zodiac letters sort of came from the same guy.
Fool.
But this whole thing where you're like, hey, the shape of this letter means that. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, once on a lark, I had my handwriting analyzed, and maybe I'll take a photo of my Zodiac notes, which I took by hand for you to use in the show notes. I had my handwriting analyzed, and the person who did the analysis said, whoever this is, you need to stay away from them. They will kill you one day. This is true, as my diet is terrible, and I will probably kill myself with cheese. But still, handwriting analysis, like, there is nobody on earth, I think, who is intelligent who believes that handwriting analysis is real. So why all this time was spent on it in the show when there was other material to use, once again, escapes me.
And the conclusion is so obvious as to almost make no sense, that it's like, oh, you believe it's clear that a serial killer is violent and angry towards women? I mean, half the Bernie bros on Twitter, never mind serial killers. Like, did you know that serial killers kill people? Serially? Well,
it's not like she got this stuff blind where Aphrodite Jones was like, hey, so who do you think this is? You know, this obviously anyone who is in the industry of handwriting analysis at this point recognizes like the Zodiac's writing. And I don't think that, you know, the Jones's producers made any effort to sort of hide it or give it to her at random or whatever. So, of course, we know that the guy, you know, hated humanity and killed more women than he did men. If he actually did all these crimes, of which I am still skeptical.
Huh. Okay. I mean, unfortunately, I wish that someone would give like
us a show.
No, well, yes. I mean, maybe not. Well, I wish someone would give us the show I described earlier, because right. I just think that would make me laugh, and why not? But what I do wish is that Graysmith had gotten a staircase type, like limited series at some point. Robert Graysmith, for those of you who don't know, played by Jake Gyllenhaal in the movie. Nice work, buddy. And has written, I think, all the Zodiac books. I listened to one of them on tape, which he read. I'm not sure he's not a crackpot, but that's a series that I would like to see. I can't recommend listeners watch this True Crime with Aphrodite Jones. We will link it in the show notes, but it's like, if you know anything about the case, it adds nothing. And if you don't, it's going to tell you shit that is not really correct. Would you agree?
I would agree. And I do think that your idea on a Graysmith show is good. I've met him a couple of times. He's very charismatic. He's very charming. He's still in, you know, for an old guy, he's still in pretty good shape. And he knows about a lot of other stuff, too. And I don't know, Sarah, if you know this, he's a huge baseball nut, too. I mean, that's what he's the parts of his career that he spent not working on the Zodiac or the Zebra, which is another sort of famous San Francisco serial crime. He's spent thinking about baseball. So he's just like all around, I think, an interesting guy. And people should, I mean, not that more old white guys need shows, but if you're going to give an old white guy a show, he's a pretty good old white guy to give one to.
And hey, if he wants to do like crime and baseball, I have an excellent source book for him and would totally be a researcher on that for free.
Oh, and I'll take you on a tangent on the movie, even though we're not here to talk about the movie. I have a little bit of a Star Trek story
for you. We tried to be here to talk about the movie, and we just couldn't find a way to make it work. So tangent away before we move on to news footage.
It's a very minor thing. Many years ago, I was walking with the actor Sam Rockwell through sort of the front, very grand lobby of the San Francisco Chronicle, a lobby that has changed somewhat since the time of, you know, when the Zodiac movie was set, but not a great deal. Now, Sam Rockwell's dad worked for the Chronicle, and it was actually very cute when Rockwell met Phil Bronstein, who at the time had just stepped down as the editor of the newspaper. Rockwell was all like, oh my God, I can't wait to tell my dad that I met you. It was very adorable. But so we're walking out of the lobby, and he said, oh, you know, this makes me think of Zodiac. And I said, the guy or the movie? And he goes, oh, that movie. The acting was terrible. So I've always wondered what role he was up for in it, because it had that sort of that butthurt sound of rejection. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. I'm married to an actor and I know it well. I could have done that tone.
Yeah, it was exactly the I could have done that tone. It wasn't just like, you know, if I was like, oh, God, you know, I watched Suicide Squad and it sucked. It was like, you know, that sort of that irritation that comes with the job poorly done. And my theory, completely baseless, is that he wanted Jake Gyllenhaal's job.
Oh, okay. I am not sure who, I mean, I can see him wanting that one because it's, you know, the juice, but I can also see him being up for Downey, Robert Downey.
For Avery.
Role. Yeah.
It's like Rockwell's weird because he could look young or old, but yeah, you're right. He could have gone for either.
Yeah. Downey is so good in that movie. I mean, whatever. There are some issues with that movie, but I love it. I've watched it a gazillion times and I think the acting is actually quite good, but yeah. I wouldn't have hated it with Sam Rockwell because I love that guy.
Yeah, right?
Hey, anyway. I'm the only one who watched Moon. Whatever.
What are you talking about? Everybody loves Moon.
Somewhere, my wife, Tara Ariana, was like, how dare you? I've seen it twice. All right. Speaking of the moon and the loonies that it can create, horrible segue, but here's our second segment. Don't ask me how I found this news footage montage. I mean, actually, it's just one of those things that YouTube was like, you might also like this. And I was like, I might, YouTube. You're right. This is a montage of not clips exactly. It's like three stories, I'm going to say, from various TV stations dating 87 to 98. And while we're on the subject of the quote unquote scientific discipline of handwriting analysis, let's listen to this crackpot from the middle of California and feel sorry for his wife.
Now, this homicide investigator in Central California claims he has broken the code.
He put in three circled eights, used three eights, and perhaps that could be his date of birth. Three eights are 24. Perhaps he was born in 1924.
Detective Harvey Hines of Escalon says his analysis of these cryptic symbols reveals the Zodiac's name is Cain.
Looney Tunes says what? Like, I literally don't understand how he's getting to these conclusions.
It could be anything. Yeah.
The Zodiac's name is Lifshitz. Sure. Could be. It's probably not. I mostly felt like this was like the local newsiest thing that ever local newsed. Like, that's the kind of person that you have to talk about on the local news versus like the national program. It just made me a little sad for this man because they did not protect him from himself at all.
Well, it also just seems like you can just see like how somebody got up that morning for whatever that local station was. It wasn't a San Francisco station, it was a Central Valley station. And they looked at their story budget and they were like, well, we can have another story about like a cow that got hit on the freeway, or we can get that guy who keeps like emailing us, not emailing us, obviously, but calling us, sending us probably letters in the mail. And so they're like, well, let's just, let's call him because we have about a 3-minute hole and we can fill it today. I mean, that was really the only explanation I could think of for this in retrospect.
Yeah, I really can't imagine that they were taking it all that seriously. The other clip features, I guess, the guy considered the most viable suspect.
Yeah.
Arthur Lee Allen. I'm not sure if you agree with that assessment. We could talk about it after the clip.
The last of those letters came in 1974, and that is when Arthur Allen went to prison on a child molestation charge. But despite an uncanny resemblance to police sketches made from witnesses' accounts of the real Zodiac, Arthur Allen continues to say they've been following the wrong guy.
I couldn't murder anyone.
Okay. I mean, I think you could. You seem to be cheerful enough about admitting that you bad-touched children.
Yeah.
Those things aren't necessarily like comorbid, but I don't know. Like, I will say that who played him in the movie? John Carroll Lynch? Is that the guy? Talk about an uncanny resemblance to like just the way he inhabits a chair. That was some excellent work by Lynch, but I had never seen actual Arthur Lee Allen, who has since died, I think, of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. Although rumor has it they were like fixing to write an indictment on him at the time of his death. Am I remembering that right?
Well, yeah, so this is one of those things where people asked SFPD about it at the time, and and they refused to comment. And so then after his death, one way or the other, nothing really moved forward. I mean, it's this is like one of those cases where every time they get some information, they officially, quote unquote, officially reopen it. And then, it's a certain point, it's like sort of officially closed again. But SFPD has this cold case unit that arguably always means that this is an active investigation, which means arguably that PIOs, that public information officers, the people you call when you're going to comment from the police, don't have to tell you anything because you've heard this a million times, right? Citing the active or the ongoing investigation, police declined to comment. So that means that, we don't know how much or how little at least San Francisco police is doing because they don't feel like saying.
And there's also this instinct, like always with these cases, to try to prove a negative. Mm-hmm. So this is where also this, like, well, you can't prove my dad didn't kill the Black Dahlia. Like, well, I probably could. It seems to mean a lot to you, so I'm not going to try to. I am going to stop reading your book at page 41. But yeah, there is a lot of, like, especially the more time that goes by. But I don't know. Do you think Alan was the guy or no?
You know, I can't back any one of these horses. I'll send you a link to a sort of handy CNN article that from 2014 that lists sort of all of the sort of viable candidates. There's even a guy, well, not viable. None of them are viable. But there's even this guy, Steve Hodell, whose dad was a Chronicle columnist at the time, who claimed that his dad, too, was it? How much of this stuff is just people who are pissed at their dads?
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. Like, I understand it must have sucked to have a crappy dad, but in order for you to feel bad and like bitter about that, you don't actually need him to be a serial killer. You can just be mad that you got the shit end with your dad. But
But I do think there it's, and at this point it's so easy to be like, well, I don't know. It's possible because, and I, you know, this is something that, you know, I think will come up in sort of this next Zodiac case that we're about to discuss, that given sort of the lack of ability to track, you know, this guy, that it's letters in the mail and all that, investigators who were investigating at the moment just had such fewer resources to deal with. I mean, it does not help that, like, some of the crimes were, like, in Vallejo, which Vallejo is maybe most recently famous for this kidnapping case in which the sheriff claimed it was a Gone Girl hoax, and it turns out it wasn't. She was actually kidnapped and raped by this crazy person who admitted to it, and the whole thing's horrible, and this woman is going to sue Vallejo for everything they've got, and I have her back.
Wow.
So anyway, Vallejo has never been known for investigative insanity. We even have this tag on the website for which I work called Vallejo MTV. Is Whack. Oh, no. The whole thing was just like it. The whole story is such a mess. And it's like Vallejo does have this long history of just sort of botching things. So, you know, definitely if you're going to be a serial killer, places like Vallejo are a good place to get a start.
Well, in our next segment, this semi sort of copycat actually kind of backed into police's arms a little bit by shooting his half-sister in the ass for making out inappropriately. But Eddie Seda, known as the New York Zodiac, I was living here not at the time that he was committing the crimes, but by the time he capped his sister and there was a standoff and then they brought him in his trial, I was living here and I don't remember this at all. And I feel like I would remember that, especially with that name. But he was called the Zodiac Killer, and we watched a Forensic Files about this case because we couldn't find one about famous original Zodiac, I think because probably Forensic Files focuses on cases that were closed, mostly. Otherwise, it seems very strange to me that they never touched this case, but I couldn't find any evidence that they did an episode on this. So it's New Zodiac, and here's a commentator from the local news organization talking about what it was like to live in the city during his reign of terror.
Before the Zodiac Killer in New York, when the guy said to a girl, "What's your sign?" he was hitting on her. Afterwards, I mean, there was literally a case where a guy asked a girl a sign, and she screamed for the police.
If guys were still using that tired shit in the late 80s, someone should have called the cops, the game cops. I'm just saying.
That anecdote to me seemed highly apocryphal.
Yeah, that very gently put, I would have gone with complete horseshit, but yeah. This guy was making his own guns and was writing letters to the police and I think also the local papers and
to claiming the Post.
You're never going to find me because I don't have, there's not going to be lance and grooves on the bullets. They did end up matching his like heap of zip guns, which I don't think I knew how fugazi those things are. Like, that you could just make it from shit that's around the house.
Oh, have you never been to Alcatraz? Because they have this whole display at the front of Alcatraz when you take the boat out there about all the crap that these guys made in their cells. And there's guns, there's shivs, all this stuff. When you go, I'll show it to you.
I have been to Alcatraz. It's been a really long time. But yep. I didn't remember. Like, I did remember the paper mache heads that I was like, are you five? But anyway, we'll return to that in another episode. But here is narrator Peter Thomas, may he rest in peace, sounding positively gleeful that the New York Zodiac was not nearly as smart as he thought he was in clip 8.
In his letters, Zodiac claimed no one would catch him because his gun barrel didn't have the traditional lands and grooves inside for testing. But the Zodiac apparently didn't know about forensic tool mark analysis.
Okay, first of all, Peter Thomas, who died last year in his 90s and did many, many voiceovers that you didn't even realize were him, was a certified badass who got every possible World War II medal and pin, and is an excellent narrator. I mentioned him in the Television Without Pity book that I wrote with Tara Ariano 10 years ago. I regret nothing. His pronunciation of the word murder is amazing. And here they did a little effect on his voice to make it echoey on tool mark analysis. Like, you know what? Get it, son. You were the best. We miss you.
And also at that moment, they show us some of the letters that he wrote to police. And, you know, I froze the screen for a second, Sarah. I'm looking at the handwriting, and I am pretty sure that this guy has a lot of anger towards women.
But is it a violently angry tendency?
Well, is it a tendency if you actually do it?
I think that if you want to cover your ass, you use tendency.
He's convicted. We can say whatever we want.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It was actually his 50th birthday last week, weirdly. Thanks, Wikipedia.
Oh, what'd you get him?
Nothing. What should I get him?
I don't know. He was kind of cute when he was young. I'm just saying that if there is somebody who gets like a lot of sort of, you know, that the email, the prison wife's, not prison wife in the interior sense, but the people who marry you when that live outside or whatever. He seems like someone who could get it.
Yeah, probably. If he stays on his meds. We will have a link in the show notes to a New York Times article from the beginning of the trial in 1998. He was not happy with his representation and apparently, like, once medicated, thought that it was completely impossible that he had committed these crimes. So he was claiming. He's trying to get the judge's attention with such phrases as, "Yo, judge." It's like, we have a Vinnie Barbarino. And
I was just going to say that, yes.
Anyway, we will link to that. Maybe I will get him the abridged Emily Post, just so that for future, like, parole hearings, he's not like, "Yo, parole board."
I mean, I typically like forensic files. I like how they structure things, but I have a significant beef with a structural element of this episode. And it's that they mention when they're talking about the individual crimes, and this to me is one of the most interesting aspects of the case, is that everyone that he killed was a different astrological sign. They make a great deal out of this in the episode. And he was a Virgo. There's even a little graphic, right, where you see the little shape and all that, whatever, you know, like the little Gemini shape or whatever. I guess he never killed a Gemini. But so you see that they make a lot of hay with this. Each person was a different sign. How did he know? Blah-de-blah. And then they don't say a goddamn other thing about it. Then when you get to the area, the bit over the credits, the part when you're already out, the part where you might have already gotten up to go get something out of the fridge, they're like, you know, "We don't know how he did it. Maybe he looked in their wallets later on." And I'm like, after he killed him, that makes no sense.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, he must have known, or he must have said something, because I think the bottom line, once he was finally in custody, was that he did want credit, as mm-hmm. we'll hear in clip 9. Maybe. Here we go.
He didn't want to go to jail for simply shooting his sister in the butt with a shotgun. He wanted to take credit for his years of handiwork.
Yeah, I'm not sure he even knew their birthdays, and that could have been a total coincidence.
Yeah, I agree. But that, to me, if we're just talking about the episode of the show is an episode of a show, they can't be all like, oh my God, and he was a Pisces. And then be like, yeah, I don't know, maybe it just been, you know, could have just been dumb luck. Who knows?
I know. I agree. And like, move that further up,
yes!
Especially since like none of the actual Zodiac killings, like he just sort of got bored of that, I guess. Or was like, it's really hard to find an Aries. Spoiler. It's not. Hi, sitting right here. You can hear us overspending and just shoot one of us.
It's the loudest typist at the coffee shop. It always is.
It really is. It really is. We try sometimes not to be, but it's like, if there were a plan, he would have said, but I think it's also interesting that like they make it about the Zodiac-ness of it when the real story is his like toxic misogyny, violent, angry tendency towards women expressed in his sister's buttock because she wouldn't stop making out with her boyfriend or, you know, whatever his issue was. And then I think there was a shootout with police, and then they find out that he's this other guy, and that sort of smoothed over that. It's like, what's interesting about him is that he was a Zodiac copycat. Like, no, what's interesting about him is that he fell into NYPD's arms, and that's not a great look, actually.
Well, didn't the Post reporter even say that he had, previous to the initial crime, he had been emailing somebody, I can't remember now, law enforcement, I can't remember if it was the feds or local police, and they just thought it was, you know, just like a nuts person who's, you know, sending them letters, which, like, is true. You know, if police really investigated every single crazy letter, they investigated every single crazy letter that you or I get and we forward to the cops. You know, the cops would not actually be solving any of the real crimes that are happening every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and actually thinking that astrological signs govern anything is like, you know, gullibility is not a crime. And I'm sure they must get a gazillion of these letters and like you have to play the odds in that case. Particularly in this city when you have like sort of secondary counterterrorism concerns, that it's like, I don't like, there's going to be an eclipse, hide your women and pets, like, no, like, we got this, it's fine.
Well, yeah, and this was, you know, late enough in the 90s where probably there was an uptick in people's ability to get crazy information to the cops. I mean, it was just like, it was harder when they needed to just send you a letter. But like, I think because didn't all of this sort of wrap like in by the mid 90s, by the time that people were starting to get like at least AOL email addresses?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, this is sort of, not that you were seeing this in scripted crime shows and still aren't, like SVU's extreme suspicion of the internet, like while partly warranted, like they never sort of adapted to it being a useful tool that they could make work for them exactly. But I wonder how long the transition took, because speaking of the book, like apparently one of Harvey Korman's children was extremely offended by the fact that we characterized his performance in some sketches as drunk. I stand by that, but we got several letters in the postal mail, and this was only 10 years ago. So, you know, like I regret offending the Korman family, but I think that carries more weight, certainly, like getting a written letter. I mean, it came to my P.O. box. I didn't feel like I was in any danger.
From Harvey Korman's family.
No, that I think they were just like, how dare you, madame? Yeah. And I was like, well, that's the job. But yeah, I think that now a written letter carries more weight. But I wonder when that transition started taking place, and especially like, there's a couple of good books in that, like how we got to this place where Reddit thinks that it's a like wing of law enforcement research, basically.
Oh boy, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, not that it's not entertaining, but I really feel for some of these ongoing like shows and podcasts that are having their work checked, quote unquote, by Reddit in real time. It's not easy.
It's always amazing to me how much free time people have.
I know. Seriously.
There must be a lot of people who really hate their jobs out there. That's all I can figure.
Yeah. Or just underutilized. Yeah. And on that tip, I got a single family house with three kitty litters. If you're really that bored, you can come over, clean up. We'll talk about the Zodiac. It'll be fun. And a question mark. Also, this is my husband's job and he's sick of it. All right. Well, if you've got nothing else on the Zodiac, I'd love to for you to tell the listeners where else they can find you and what else you're working on.
Well, so in my day job, I write for SFIST, S-F-I-S-T. It's a San Francisco news, arts, culture website. Today, so far, the only thing I've written is about a pretty gross case I was telling Sarah about before we started, a beloved restaurant owner who allegedly was molesting a very young child for a number of years. So you can find that uplifting story to lighten your day at sfist.com. When I'm not doing that, I own a store in San Francisco that I would love all of you to visit as opposed to just sending it a letter in the mail. It's called Avenues Dry Goods. It's on Irving Street, between 42nd and 43rd Avenues. We specialize in items from local artists and craftspeople, a lot of neat locally made stuff. So if you're just visiting San Francisco, don't buy that made in China shot glass and Fisherman's Wharf. Come out to the beach and buy something that was actually made in San Francisco from us.
And I believe, if you ask very nicely, the folk at ADG will send things out of town.
Absolutely. We are happy to do that. We're happy to do that. And we're also, if this is a situation where you are indeed traveling and you don't want to carry something back, we are happy to ship it back to wherever you came from for you so you don't have to deal with the TSA smashing it.
Yeah. Koi Tower Space Invaders, big hit in my
family.
That's
right. Thank you.
Yeah, indeed. Eve, thank you so much for coming on the show once again. You can find our show notes on our website at previously.tv. That's where you can also discuss this episode and all the other episodes on our forums. That's previously.tv/forums. You can buy an ad if you'd like, previously.tv/ad. And you can find us on Twitter at Blotter Presents and on Facebook at Blotter Presents. Coming up, we've got returning guest Kim Reed on Lacey Peterson and also another local crime connection for Kim. We've got returning guest Al Lowe on the Natalie Holloway case. And we've got first-time guest and my co-host on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, Mark Blankenship, on Biggie Smalls and also some Italian Renaissance murder. I don't know what's going on, but I think it's going to be pretty entertaining. So please subscribe on your podcast thing of choice. Rate and review us. We'd really love it. We always love to hear from you, and we will talk to you next time on The Blotter Presents.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.